Oh, yeah. Are you pumped? I'm pumped. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're grateful that you've tuned in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, SnapTea. They made that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show, all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Tuenz, 1T Kanata, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's finishing up work on his Elsa Halloween costume, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, man, Estelle would love that. She is, she's late to the party, but she's deep on that Frozen tip right now. We actually did finish our Halloween costumes. I always like them to look a little homemade. These look a little homemade. I'm very proud of them, though, so I'm excited. Nervous and excited for Friday. What's up?
What are you going as for reals?
Well, to be shown. You know what I mean? We have a grand reveal Friday. No big deal.
Surprises. Yeah. But are you doing a full fam theme costume like you did last year?
Yep. Last year we were Joel and what's her name and Ellie. What's the other? It doesn't matter. And then I tweeted last night, costumes finished. And Anthony said, are they the same from last year, just remastered? I thought that was funny.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Well, we're not talking about Halloween costumes, although I'm very excited for the holiday. Because it's on a Friday this year, so it's going to be awesome. We're talking about video games and board games and DLC. What is it? Well, it stands for your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, very excited because DLC stands for, direct from London, Cam. Because we've got GameSpot UK's senior producer and presenter, the host of a very cool web show that I really dig called Reality Check, Mr. Cam Robinson. Welcome, Cam.
Hey, thanks very much. I'm guessing I'm just here because my first name fits so well into that little DLC. And I'm happy. That's good enough for me.
I do prioritize people who make the initials work. Yes. I dig your show, Reality Check. Is it coming back for another season?
Oh, yeah. It's like on forever until the end of time, as far as I know. Like it's a weekly thing. So I make a new episode of every week, something to do with science and games. It's like a really broad remit. But yeah, it's really fun. Like it's actually something I brought to GameSpot when I first started, and you know, I'd actually brought it to some other games websites, which I won't mention, and they've been like, meh, nobody's gonna watch that. And now I get to make it every week, which is it's really fun.
I dig it, man. It's really smart, it's really fun, and you do a great job with it. So yeah.
Thanks,
man. People check it out. You can check it out at GameSpot's YouTube page, is that right?
Yeah, both. I mean, it goes on GameSpot and on YouTube. So, just go to GameSpot.com and shows and then Reality Check, or just go to YouTube. And it goes up on Thursday. I should really know this. It goes up on Thursdays. No, wait. No, Fridays on the site and then Sundays on YouTube. There we go. I'm really good at this plugin stuff. Really good.
Well, let's get on with the show. We have a ton of news. So let's get right to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, the part of the show where we try to convince one another the most important stories that happened in the world of gaming this week. You, the listener, can contribute to our discussion by sending stories for our consideration to us via Twitter using our hashtag, and that hashtag is DLCSOTW, or using the subreddit. Now, the subreddit is really taking off, and I really dig it. That's at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. And there's a discussion every week of the episode that comes out, and people submit stories. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Cam, what is your pick for Story of the Week?
So I think my pick has to be the PS4 update 2.0, which is coming tomorrow, I think, right? It's and across the world tomorrow. And this is quite exciting. I mean, I've actually been playing a lot of PS4 lately, and some of the things in here I've been really excited to see, including, so SharePlay is the one that's got me quite interested, because it seems almost, and at first reading, it seems almost too good to be true. You know, like the fact that, so basically what SharePlay, one of the things it can do is it will allow someone else who maybe doesn't have the game that you're playing to join you. So Far Cry 4 is a good example, right? And what's quite interesting, though, is both people don't even need to have PlayStation Plus, which I didn't realize was going to be a thing. Right. That seems amazing. Like, that's quite the gift. But so I was reading through this article, actually on the little site called GameSpot.com, which was published by my news editor just a few minutes ago. It's really good.
See, you are good at this plug stuff.
Maybe I am. Yeah, maybe I am. Anyway, it's got like the 26 essential stuff. But one of the things that is quite interesting, though, because my initial reaction was, this is too good. You know, why are people going to go and necessarily, is this not going to deter people from buying games? But then it's interesting to see that the resolution and frame rate is probably going to be, well, definitely going to be restricted if you are playing over SharePlay. Like, I think 720p is the max it's going to support, and probably 30 frames will be a max as well. So that kind of is a pretty good situation, really, because it's good enough to give you a taste, but not so good that Sony should really worry about people not buying games, I reckon.
Yeah, I think
what do you guys make of it?
I think there's going to be plenty of restrictions that will make you want to play your own copy of the game or purchase your own copy of the game. And I think historically, if you look at any kind of media type that allows people to get a taste of it before they buy it, it usually leads to people buying more of it. I mean, usually this is a fantastic way to market games. It's a fantastic way to get people excited about games. I think it's going to be awesome. I hope it's going to be awesome. I'm excited to try it. How about you, Christian? Are you into a SharePlay idea?
The idea of SharePlay, I mean, I think I agree a lot with kind of the stage Cam was setting, where it's like, the idea is awesome. And I'm really curious to see the functionality. I mean, I think PlayStation Now is an awesome idea, and I, you know, jumped in the beta when it was first out and played some games, and I haven't used it since. I don't know how often I will use this personally, because I feel like, you know, most of my friends that I play games with, they're as deep into the addiction as I am. But, you know, the idea of it is really, really cool. For instance, if, you know, you did, you know, like Wolfenstein. I really liked Wolfenstein. It was an under-the-radar game for some people. And if I had it, then I could, you know, go out and sing its praises and get my friends to then play it with me also. And, you know, it's a safe way to do it. And I think to some extent it's a nice, I don't know, I wonder if it's the modern rental, if that makes sense. I know PlayStation Now is rental, so I realize what I'm saying. But it's that new way to get people to experience a game before, you know, putting $60 down on it. I hope it works smoothly. That's the key, right? Like, how long does it really take to buffer or whatever it's doing? And how fast can I jump in? And if I'm playing Shadow of Mordor with a 15 frame per second frame rate, that sucks. I'd rather not be playing it. So, you know, I need to see it in implementation. But the idea is, how could anyone hate the idea of it?
Well, and as a lot of people are pointing out in the chat room right now, there is a 1 hour limit for share play. So it's not like you can just spend all day not paying for the game and playing it with your friend. It is more like a get a taste, enjoy something that maybe your buddy wants you to hang out with him and play for a while. So,
I'm married with a kid, so I already have a 1 hour limit regardless. So it works just fine.
What about some of these other new features that will be coming along with the update 2.0? We got YouTube integration, uploading your gameplay videos. They're really supporting the broadcasting, live broadcasting in a big way, which is really cool. Themes and play music in the background. You can plug in a USB music player and play music in the background of your games. All cool stuff, too.
Yeah, really bizarre one, I'm keen to see how they're actually going to make it work, is apparently, like, some games are going to be set so only the kind of host, as it were, sees potentially spoilery stuff. So it's also going to, like, mask your freeloading buddy from spoilers, which is kind of crazy. I don't really know how that's going to work, but that's quite cool.
Interesting. I mean, I'm assuming it'll work similarly to the way broadcasting will black out certain things when you're getting achievements and stuff like that. Maybe that's what they're talking about. It remains to be seen. We'll probably be talking about this lots more next week after we've had some hands-on with this new update, but it's very exciting, and it's cool that we live in an era where these consoles get major revisions like this. Last generation was the same way, but I'm digging the increased support and the listening to what gamers want and adding that into the firmware.
Well, I won't. argue against that. I do think to some extent, there's a little frowny face to things being updates. And I guess it's kind of like, you know, I'm an Apple user and I've been an Apple user for a while. And so I've created workarounds for things that worked for me before, like Apple's cloud service was competent and stuff like that. And now, you know, they've updated their cloud drive and it is competent and good. And they give you a good amount of data storage space for, you know, a reasonable amount of money and blah, 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 blah. And so I feel like when you have big updates like this, like SharePlay or whatever, like how many users that already are comfortable with their PS4 will then go in and explore and get comfortable with a new feature like that. You know what I mean? That might take some understanding. Whereas if it was an out of the box feature, I think people would maybe be more inclined to use it and play with it. Maybe I'm off, but that's always my concern for these like cool, new, slightly tech leaning updates when people are maybe already comfortable and in their routine with their console is how much use will they actually get versus if it was a day one feature.
Oh, what's your story of the week, Christian?
I mean, well, we need to talk about, I think the price drop on the Xbox One in the U.S. is big, so I'd want to talk about that. But a personal, very big smiley face for me is the hopeful addition of PlayStation 3 Fight Sticks working, being able to be updated to work, USB Fight Sticks, being able to be updated to work on the PlayStation 4. And this is happening through Lab Zero, and it's who developed Skullgirls Encore along with Naughty Dog's John Bellamy. And they're trying to make a driver that will make some PS3 Fight Sticks compatible with the PlayStation 4. This is for a very small group of people, but I am one of those people. and it kind of blew my mind when both the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 came out. And, you know, their USB inputs, they're largely PCs, and, you know, racing wheels and fight sticks weren't up compatible. Like, those things are expensive, and you put some money into it, and I love anything that makes, you know, the hobby less expensive and allows you to carry over your awesome gear that you had from the last generation. And I was really bummed to learn when that wouldn't happen. And what I think is cool about what Lab Zero is trying to do is... they're going to let other developers use it and adapt it for their own titles as long as they share the work with Lab Zero. So it's kind of like, you know, shareware or public domain. They're putting it out there and anyone can use it and develop it. And they want to have it live by the time Skullgirls launches on the PS4.
Is this a software solution or like a dongle?
It's a software solution. I believe it's a driver. I'm scanning through. I saw this on joystick.com to give them... credit for where I saw it, and it just looks like it will work. To talk about USB gamepads or joysticks, I'm assuming it's a driver that is a download, right? I don't know. That's a good question, though.
Interesting.
I don't think it could be a dongle, because then you'd have a USB, you'd have to be buying something from them, and I don't think
these companies
are set up for that.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. It'd be great. You're absolutely right. I mean, I think... even more than arcade sticks, driving wheels, which are even an order of magnitude more expensive, it seems to me, than a lot of stuff. It's ridiculous that you have to rebuy it every console generation when these things could easily be adapted to work. But that's not in the interest of the companies that make money from the sales of these, you know, new iterations every time.
I'd
cool.
like to take it a step further even, and I'd love it if you could use your old controller, like regular controller, like. Granted, the new ones have new features or whatever. Like, I understand that aspect of it, but it's kind of like, you know, if you're comfortable with this controller, like, I don't know. I really like the idea of use what you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we're not there, but anytime we get closer to that, it makes me happy.
Well, yeah, let's totally talk agree. A little bit of... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
And I was just going to say, there's no good reason for, even though you have new features, just enabling you to... kind of customize the controller as you want. You know, you can even do the whole pushing two buttons to account for that missing input you've got if it lets you use your old devices. I mean, and also actually on the racing wheel thing, we've got a model at work. I cannot remember which one it is, but it did work with the PS3 for GT6, and it does also work on the PS4 for Drive Club. So that one seems to work across both. So maybe if you've got a racing wheel, it might work across both.
Well, you know that programmable controller thing, you know what that's called? It's called a PC. Christian, you brought up the
Sorry, we need to. If we're talking about the, singing the praise of PCs, though, we definitely need to talk about Assassin's Creed Unity. I'm just going to keep teasing stories.
Well, how about we do one at a time? Let's talk about the Xbox One price cut, which you already brought up. $50. It's a limited time price cut. It's meant to juice the holiday sales of the Xbox One. I think this is just for the United States. So sorry, Cam.
Yep, I can't confirm. Just for the US.
Yeah. But it is big news this side of the pond for us. This is kind of a big, I would say, 1-2 punch, but it's more like 1-2-3 punch with a price drop, a couple of big titles coming out, including Sunset Overdrive, which we're going to be talking about a lot next week. It comes out tomorrow. And Forza Horizon 2. So they've got some really attractive games. They've got $50 less expensive, and that goes across all bundles. So even the standalone system is going to be $350 until January 3rd. And the Assassin's Creed Unity bundle will cost, the Assassin's Creed Black Flag bundle with Black Flag included will be $50 less. And the Kinect version will be $50 less. So it's across all versions. And I think this is pretty cool. Do you think, Cam, that this could be what the Xbox One needs to win the holiday, or do you think it's already decided here in the States?
I don't know. I mean, what surprises me here is the lack of COD bundle, because COD's out next week, and surely that would be the big, like, if you want, there's still a bunch of people who haven't purchased, you know, the next gen console yet, and if you're trying to get a whole load of people just before Christmas to choose, you know, Xbox One or PS4, if you've got the cheaper system by $50, including Call of Duty, that seems to me like an insta win. I don't quite understand why that's not there. So I think that would make a big difference. I mean, I'm not really sure. If it was for me, it wouldn't make a difference enough. Like $50 is a lot. If it was a £50 difference over here in the UK, you know, that would be big news, and that would maybe make me consider if I was in a position of not owning one already. But I don't know. This is a lame on the fence answer.
There is a Call of Duty bundle.
There is.
Yeah.
Oh,
and so it's a little cheaper. Okay. So it's an Xbox One limited edition Call of Duty Advanced Warfare bundle, mouthful, for $449 suggested. And so I'm assuming that before the drop, that was $500.
Right.
So there is a
bundle. It's just not, I mean, right, the way you advertise this is you advertise now available from $349, and then you show the Call of Duty bundle, which is not that price. But, I mean, so I think they're hitting that low price point, but then also they have, I think there's an Assassin's Creed Unity bundle. There's the Call of Duty bundle. There's a Sunset Overdrive bundle, which seems like they first must have exclusive potentially for the Xbox One. I don't know, man. I think they're throwing some punches. I think they're going after it, right? Holiday season is the heavyweight title fight, and I think, you know, it looks like Microsoft is maybe going all in.
What do you think, Christian? Do you think this is going to make a big dent? We're going to see significant sales of Xbox One? Do you think there's a potential of NPD showing that Xbox One wins the holiday? Wins November?
I mean, I think there is a really good chance that Xbox One will sell a bunch of units this holiday. I'm curious to see how it affects, because, you know, NPD tracking is, you know, for bundled games and stuff like that, whether or not it hurts their attach rate, because to some extent, you can get a bundle with the best game, you know, or whatever you personally think is the best game coming out this holiday season. So I don't know how many games they'll be selling and if that will hurt their attach rate and whatever. But, I mean, it's pretty compelling. If you haven't taken a next or a current gen PS4, Xbox One plunge yet, I think it's a pretty good deal. But that's, of course, this is assuming that the world stays the same through the holiday season as it is announced right now, right? Like that Sony doesn't do something akin to what Microsoft did during the Destiny bundle and announce get a free game, which can be Call of Duty, right, when you buy a PlayStation 4. But as the world sits now, I mean, $50 is it's a lot of money. It's another controller. If you have a, you know, multi-gamer household, it gets you close to another game. I think it's pretty cool. I think it will make a dent. What about you, Jeff? Do you think this is just too little too late, or do you think that this is you know, something that can make a difference.
I think that as we see these the buzz for Sunset Overdrive, I mean, it's hard for a new IP to be a system seller. We've seen that. But I think as the buzz for that extends, and there's really no answer from the Sony side, you know, for this holiday season as far as a big first party kind of exclusive. I mean, I know Sunset Overdrive isn't first party, but there isn't that big exclusive system seller type exciting new kind of experience that they're offering. I think there's a lot of people that own PS4s that don't own Xbox Ones that might now jump to Xbox One. It's not that, you know, they're only Xbox One owners, but there's probably going to be a lot of second console purchases this holiday to get that other kind of unique gaming experience you can't get anywhere else. And I think, honestly, combine that with another story that happened this week, which is that Titanfall's interesting update that added co-op and ranked modes, I think juicing that franchise a little bit and making that kind of back into the consciousness of gamers, of people who were excited, and maybe that game fell to the wayside when Destiny came out, and Destiny was more associated with the PlayStation brand than the Xbox brand, and Titanfall kind of lost a lot of the buzz. Maybe there's a little buzz returning to that with this co-op mode that I think really should have been included when the game launched. But
and let's not forget Master Chief coming out. Very, I mean, it's old games, but that's a big game dropping. I think that there's a lot sitting in Microsoft's corner right now, and they're going to throw some punches. And I just looked it up. The Call of Duty bundle has a 1 terabyte drive versus the standard 500 gigabyte.
Right. Which is what you get on Dropbox now, which is crazy to me.
That is crazy.
Anyway, what do you think, Cam? Are you think this is a solid strategy for Microsoft as far as what do you think about Titanfall adding co-op? Have you had a chance to try it?
I've not had a chance to try the co-op yet. I think it's interesting the timing. I mean, obviously Call of Duty next week. I wonder if maybe it would have been better to wait for the initial Call of Duty surge, because that's all anyone's going to be playing, and then maybe launch this to try and add more kind of closer to Christmas. I don't really know, but I think it looks really interesting. I played quite a lot of Titanfall when it first came out and got quite into it, and then it didn't hold my attention all the way through, unfortunately. I think it's just because other things came along. I mean, we're going to talk more about what we've been playing, but I've been playing pretty solidly over the last few months a bunch of slightly older games, including things like Metro. I do think it's good. I mean, I wish that price cut was over here. I would love to see how that would influence the UK market, especially if they could throw in like a FIFA bundle or something, because FIFA is still outselling everything here in the UK. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how that could change people's buying habits. I mean, me personally, it's not enough to make me want to take the second console plunge, but maybe that's because I live in a tiny, very, very expensive flat in London. But but I don't know. Like it
really also makes you not want to take the buying dinner plunge.
Like, no, I know. Yeah.
I'll just have ramen.
Ramen, of course. Yeah, yeah. Over here it's porridge. You know, we got our own. So yeah. Okay, this is another kind of like I'm not really sure kind of answer for you guys, but. It, for me personally, it's not enough, but if that price cut was over here and there was FIFA bundles, and I could see that making an impact. You guys mentioned, I'm really keen to see what Sony will do in response to this, if they'll do anything at all.
Yeah,
that'd be really interesting.
What do you think, Jeff, about this? They're advertising it as it's a discount for a limited time only.
Until January 3rd.
You can raise the price again, or on January 3rd, it becomes $100 cheaper.
This is kind of like a sale. They're having a sale, a holiday sale on the system. It's not a price drop. It's just a holiday sale. It'll be interesting to see if they then announce, oh, it's not going up after all. But I don't think that there's a problem. I don't think it feels like a price raise at that point. No, I think it's just like a temporary sale.
So like the January 4th press release is Xbox One now available without any bundled in games for $400.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to press release that one. I think Mark from marketing would not advise the announcement of the price going back to its normal place.
But this is a great time to jump in, man. Holy moly. What a deal.
I'm really excited for Sunset Overdrive. We'll be talking about that, of course, a lot next week. But it's a game I've had you know, my eye on for a long time. And I think it makes a really strong case for that system for this holiday. So, you know, it's a system that I often just use to watch television on lately, but I'm hoping to be using it a lot more. Since you, Christian, as is your wont, you have forced your way into adding multiple stories. Let's go ahead and talk about the other story you were kind of teasing. And that is more Assassin's Creed weirdness. The Unity PC version specs were announced this week. And wow, you need a pretty powerful PC to play this guy. I can run down. Basically, you need a 64-bit operating system. You need at least a Core i5, although they're recommending a i7. You need 6 gigs of RAM. They're recommending 8. And you need a pretty pumping video card. Not only that, you need 50 gigs of hard drive space available. What? It's a big footprint. This, to me, points to the fact that the PC versions that they're putting out at Ubisoft are kind of afterthoughts, and they're just porting them over, and they were made for very specific console hardware, and they don't really care about the PC market. Maybe that's unfair of me to qualify it like that, but it certainly seems that way. What's your take on this, Cam?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, just looking at that list, that's terrifying. That's it's a GTX 680 at is that a minimum? Like, wow,
That's a minimum.
That's gonna be tough for a lot of people. But I mean, when I played a lot of Assassin's Creed games, I've never chose to play them on PC. And just from speaking to the dev guys on various points, it does seem like they are very much geared to producing this for next gen. Like, I had a chat with their head of graphics at an event, like their art lead at an event, and he was talking about basically how they're using kind of global illumination type tech and all this kind of stuff, but it's all about fitting it into the architecture of next gen of the PS4 and Xbox One. So I think your hunch could maybe be correct. Afterthought might be a bit harsh, but I think it's definitely being developed with the exact architecture of, like, you know, the PS4 and Xbox One in mind.
Yeah.
But you know, on the download size, I mean, it's the scale of Paris that they're putting in is pretty exciting. That like, I'm not a huge Assassin's Creed fan, but I am excited for wandering around, like, Paris that they've recreated.
Oh, so I agree. I would love if, for all of the worlds that they have created in Assassin's Creed, for Italy, for Constantinople, for all the past games, I wish they would just release those worlds with a different game inside them. Like, let me do something different, and I would be, I think I would enjoy that franchise more. But the universes that they create, the level of detail that they've put in, and historical accuracy and sort of interesting features of all those places, it's wonderful to see.
Like, most of downtown Paris in this game is one-to-one, you know, so including, like, Notre Dame and all this. It's all, like, built. Although, interestingly, they kind of built, the development team built it without actually visiting Paris, which is kind of crazy. They did it all from schematics and everything, which must have been a hell of a challenge.
That's a note to the team. We're not visiting Paris. Wait, what? Why did I take this job?
Yeah. Like, this is the whole point. I thought I was going to get to Paris. They think they were just stuck in Montreal the entire time, but... I don't know. I'm keen to play this one for the first time in a few years. I'm quite excited about this. But it's mainly the Paris thing. It's the Paris thing that's drawing me. And I'm a bit of a history nerd, so it should be good.
So the game you want, Jeff, is they build these awesome worlds, and then you get to play as Beyonce and Jay-Z and walk around them as they get to. Did you guys picture of, like, them in front of the Mona Lisa? And it's just, like, them right there taking a picture of it. Like, anyone else, you're like, 200 people back staring at this tiny painting. Welcome to Jay-Z and Beyonce Creed Unity. Explore a world, go into any building, be the only person there. I think big download sizes, though, are just, I don't know, it's not laziness per se, but it is, I mean, they're coming out on a lot of systems and trying to get this big game out, and I think it's just not optimizing it, or I guess the positive spin is we're not compressing the audio files. You know, it's, you know, whatever it is, because you just...
I doubt that that's what it is, but go
Well,
ahead.
That was the Titanfall thing, wasn't it? That was the reason why Titanfall was so big, is all the audio was lossless or something.
Oh, is that so? I didn't hear that. I'm noticing in the chat, Space Bob is pointing out that Titanfall was also 50 gigs, but was that the reason that they said it, was that they didn't compress the audio?
I think so.
There's been a few games that have used that, and it's like, or, you know, on PC we have 18 different languages available, and it's like, I guess great, but, like, I get it, but like, it's huge. But I mean, then again, Halo Master Chief Collection comes, if you buy it on disc, comes with the day one 20 gig download. Like, stuff is just big.
Stuff is just big.
there's your title.
that is our title. And that might be something to transfer right into our sponsor, which I have to do right now. That might be something you want to put on a t-shirt. And the best way to make your own t-shirts, it's super easy, is to use our sponsor, SnapTee. SnapTee is an app that lets you design or create your own t-shirts really easily, really effectively, and they look cool. It's one of a kind t-shirts that you can create, or you can browse what other people have created, because there's thousands and thousands of t-shirts that have already been created, so you can check that stuff out too. It has endless options to choose from. You can even import your own designs to use, so if you've designed something on, you know, in Photoshop or something, you can do that. It's a place where you can check out other artists, people that maybe even have more skill than you have, and buy their designs. You can favorite certain artists and favorite certain designs and see what other users have designed as well. It's not just a design app, it's a design community. And if you don't know where to start, they have a really cool feature called SnapTee Locker that lets you get inspiration from millions of pre-designed t-shirts. It's free to use. You just go over to snapte.co. That's SnapTee.co /getapp. Or download the app itself just from the App Store or the Google Play Store. And we have a special offer because you listen to DLC. We'll give you a DLC. When you purchase your own Masterpiece t-shirt, if you enter our promo code 5x5DLC, that's 5BY5DLC, at checkout, you get 10% off your purchase. That excludes sweatshirts, but any t-shirt you do, 10% off your first purchase. Super cool. That's promo code 5x5DLC. So go to snapt.co/getapp, check it out, and start making your own t-shirts. This is really, really cool. I've been fiddling with it all week, and it's really easy to make awesome t-shirts, and I love having the most unique t-shirt at the convention or, just on my block. So check it out. We appreciate SnapTee supporting our show, so we hope you support them in return. Some other stories. Of course, last week we had a lot of speculation about what that Nintendo Direct all about Super Smash Brothers Wii U 50 new things would be. Well, we certainly got our answer this week in a, depending on your point of view, ridiculously cheesy or delightfully cheesy announcer voice guy doing Super Smash Brothers. By the way, I'm available if they need to replace that guy. It was weird in a lot of ways, especially in the fact that it's kind of positioned as an attack ad on their own product. It's like, you thought the 3DS version was good? It sucks compared to this. It's like the whole thing is just like comparison of how much better the Wii U version is going to be. It's like, aren't you trying to sell the 3DS version also? Really strange, but boy, that game has the kitchen sink in it. It seems like insanity. 1080p resolution, 8-player mode on certain maps, very selection of maps, but 8-player mode, which is insane, although that's not online, it's only local. It's got a stage builder mode where you can use the Wii pad to create your own stages for battling, and that really allows you to make any kind of weird, crazy, unusable stage you want, and eventually at some point you'll be able to share those online. It was a very odd presentation, in my opinion, mostly because of how Japanese it felt. It really didn't feel like most things you see now from the West, as far as they were really honest, you know? They're really like detailed, encyclopedic amount of information, dense amount of information that really doesn't matter to only a very select few people. And really honest about, like, well, this isn't going to be in there. We're hoping at some point, we really want you to try it. You know, it's very earnest, which I kind of give it a lot of credit for. Cam, what did you think about what's happening for Smash Brothers Wii U? Is it all things to all people, or does it feel like an unfinished game?
Well, I gotta be completely honest. I have until last week, I had never played a Smash Brothers game. It was like my massive gaping hole in my gaming. But we actually played it as part of the extra live stream we're doing, and for that hour, it literally became all I cared about. I now love that game, and I can't believe I've never spent time playing Smash Bros. Before. So there was just three of us playing, so 8-player just sounds insane. And yes. Building stages, I love when you can build stages for stuff. Like, I would spend hours building like tracks and things like V-Rally or whatever it was years and years ago. So I'm a big fan of stage building. So this sounds great. And on the point about the... I love the way Nintendo always are super earnest and just... weird, wonderfully weird in all their directs and all this kind of stuff. It's always makes me want to watch these videos. But I missed this one for some reason. Maybe it was when I was streaming. I don't remember. But yeah, what do you guys make of it? Do you play a lot of Smash Brothers?
Well, I know Christian, you're a big fan. You dig in the 3DS version, although Nintendo has officially told you it's crap.
Yeah, well, I want someone listening that has the skills. I want someone to make a Cam and Smash Brothers romantic comedy trailer where it's like, you kept missing each other for years, and Smash Brothers got on this tube, and you're going the other way, and never the two shall meet until 2014.
It's the modern Romeo and Juliet.
I mean, to me, it's to some extent, the Smash Direct felt kind of like... Apple press conferences where in touting how awesome the iPhone 6 is, they're like, if you still own an iPhone 5 or 5S, you're an idiot. And you're just like, oh, this thing that's less than a year old is a piece of crap. I guess
no, it's not less than
away.
A year old. It's like a couple of weeks old, and it's the same game. I mean, it's not like the old version of the iPhone and the new version of the iPhone. It's the version of the game that came out on this hardware, which is supposed to be just as viable and long lasting as anything else. And now we got a new version a couple of weeks later. I don't know. I just don't even think that analogy fits.
That was always happening. I think for better or worse, you know, Nintendo originally launched or announced the 3DS version of Smash was going to come out in the summer. Then it got delayed. I don't think in their, you know, hopes the two come out this close together to one another. But I think how Mark from marketing, how you spin it. And again, Nintendo is, even with their Treehouse Stream stuff, which was U.S. led at E3, they are just kind of like encyclopedic and direct, and they don't put a lot of spin in it, which is, I think, great at times because you just get to see all the information. But I think the other
all
way,
the information,
50 new things, Jeff.
My favorite part of the presentation when the announcer guy was like, look how much music is in this thing. If we just sold the composer list, it would be more expensive than the game. You know, it's like, what? No one cares about the music in your game, dude. It's like, it's just so ridiculous.
But
I know people care about the music in your game. Save your emails. Don't write me an email. I know people care about the music, but it was just really ridiculous to me. Okay, go ahead, Christian.
DLCfeedback@gmail.com. The response is right. Like, look at this awesome, huge game. We packed so much awesome stuff into the Wii U, and we do stuff only the Wii U can do. And by the way, that 3DS version, we made the full version of Smash, every prior version of Smash. We packed so much Smash into a handheld game. This was never possible on the go before. And now you have one of the most feature complete versions of Smash ever available. But if you want to take it to the, you know what I mean? You sell them both positively. But if you want to take it to the next level and do things that are only available on the Wii U, then you're going to need to get this version too. You know what I mean? Because like the, yeah. To have Smash on a handheld that's as complete as the 3DS version is awesome. But they need to sell Wii U's, so they need to make sure that the Wii U one is awesomer.
Well, let's stop criticizing the marketing of it and talk to me about, like, you're a fan. You've been playing your 3DS version. Are you excited about the Wii U version? Do you feel like these new added things that make it awesomer is going to really put it over the top, or is it just more extra stuff that you don't need?
I mean, I think it's honestly more extra stuff that the game did not need to be successful. I think it's great that Nintendo isn't just, you know, porting it, essentially releasing the same game for both systems. But I think had they done exactly that, I think this would still sell gangbusters for them, and I think it would still be a system seller. I think people have been waiting to get this. I think it'll be a great game. For me, you know, the Wii U version of Smash is enough of a has enough appeal just to play Smash on a 60-inch TV in HD, right? Like, that is enough. That's awesome. But I like seeing that they're doing all this cool stuff. I think Build a Level is a duh. Of course that needs to be in it. An 8-player is going to be crazy party game. You know what I mean? Some of the other stuff, whatever. But I like seeing, again, like we talked about last week, I'd rather have it be in there than not in there, because the core game of Smash is so tight, and I don't think it took away anything from that. I mean, do you hate all this stuff?
Not at all. Not at all. I think it's pretty amazing that they're smashing it full of stuff. The oddest bit for me was the reveal of how the amiibos are going to work. I've been saying on the show for months that I think amiibo should be how Nintendo doubles down on that technology, and really is how they make Wii U seem exciting and different. It should be a console-wide initiative, in my opinion. But it feels like even in just this game, it's a really strange implementation, because it kind of reminds me of a little Tamagotchi that they're adding into the game. It's not what I thought it would be, which is build your character, store him in here, go to your friend's house, pull him out, play as him. Rather, it's the amiibo is its own little dude, and when you put him on in your system, he pops out and you can fight against him, and you can just watch him fight other guys of his, instead of playing as him and making him part of the player experience. You're creating this more powerful guy that you can then battle against, which, why do I want to level him up so that he can start kicking my butt? I don't quite understand that. Seems odd to me. Cam, have you seen this bit? Are you excited about amiibo?
I'm currently got a very confused face on, because I'm like, what? You can't play as the as your amiibo character?
That's what it seemed like to me watching the direct.
That seems kind of crazy. I mean, I've been really interested to see what they do with amiibo, because it seems like, you know, the Wii U's potential golden ticket in a way, to make another reason to make it stand out. Because, hey, you know, all those toys you love collecting for Skylanders and Disney Infinity, well, now you can, and it's actually good toys that people care about. It's Mario. I know people care about Skylanders, obviously, but, you know, it's like, it's Mario, it's Luigi, it's Yoshi, for Christ's sake. So I think it's weird if you can't take this around to your friends as a toy and then play as it. That seems strange to me. I'm going to have to check that out and find out more about that, because that's bizarre. But
certainly what it seemed like.
But because the Wii U is interesting. For me, I never, ever thought I would be considering purchasing a Wii U. Just because I've never been a big... Nintendo's never been my go-to. I've always played Nintendo games with the friends who've had them and everything. But the more I see the kind of game catalog that's building up for this console, that's above me. That's above... the Xbox One, for me personally, as like a next console to get, because, you know, Bayonetta 2 alone, I managed to play about an hour of that, and that game is just insane fun. So yeah, I think all this stuff is good. It's good for me, because it's really this is a console which I kind of dismissed probably quite stupidly when it came out from the initial lineup. It's now becoming like a real driver for me. How about you guys? You guys have a Wii U? Do you play a lot of it? Are you tempted to get one if you don't?
Well, I have one. I'm tempted to let Christian borrow mine, which is about to happen. No, I'm excited about this. I do want to play it. I do want to point out a couple of things from the chat room that I found interesting. One of them is from Pastor Matitis. He said, I don't have 8 friends who even know what Smash Brothers is, which is kind of my problem. Is like, as much as I want to play this 8-player mode, I don't know when I would have 8 players in the same room to be able to play that, which is interesting. I mean, it makes me, I wish the mode that they added in the game was go back to college and live in the dorm mode, because I would totally sign up for that just to have this experience. I think it's going to be awesome in a dorm room. And then the other comment is from Maximilian, who is really criticizing my lack of respect for the music. He said it's one of the reasons people love Smash. It is a celebration of all those composers and all of those IPs. I get it. Just felt like a weird thing to highlight in the direct of like, we put so much music into this game, just sit around and listen to the music. I don't know. Felt weird. But maybe I'm the only one who thinks that. Christian, your response?
I mean, the Wii U, I don't think, Cam, it's wrong to have dismissed it at launch. I mean, I think you wait until there are games you want to play, and the Wii U now has enough games to justify the purchase price for me, in my opinion. Other people have made that purchase price earlier, you know, decision earlier, and it's worked for them. That's great. The Xbox One is getting there. It's not quite there yet, I think, for a lot of people, but I think this has just been a slow launch in general in terms of must-have games for all of these consoles, and I think to some extent that's a testament for how awesome last gen was and what people were able to get out of those systems. I think the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 have sold, you know, had better sales than like the Wii U when it came out. Because, you know, I know Jeff and I are like this, and I think a lot of people are. It's that, ooh, this is new and sexy and better graphics and, you know, this, that, and the other, whereas the Wii U was launching as a comparable to PS3, Xbox 360 graphic level game with some ports of those very games. So I think it held it back, whereas people were chomping at the bit for new systems by the time the Xbox One and PS4 came out. But I think that's totally smart to look at a catalog and decide whether or not it's worth the $200 to $400 if there are then enough $60 games you want to spend money on to spend that hundreds of dollars up front. But I mean, Smash, Mario Kart, it's the Nintendo games, right? They're coming out. Then plus a few surprises like Bayonetta, and I know some people, despite its, you know, okay Metacritic score, really enjoyed Wonderful 101, and it's building that catalog that is intriguing now and hopefully continues to build with, you know, Zelda and the other games coming down the pipeline. And the same for Microsoft. I think this holiday for Microsoft is, like we talked about, a really, really strong one where, you know, I think all of these consoles have a lot of gaming ahead of them.
We never even got to my story of the week, which I have to say is the fact that Extra Life raised over $5 million. And Cam, I know you participated this year. Was this the first year that you've done the 24-hour gaming for charity?
This is the third year GameSpot's done a thing. And this is the second time I've been involved. But the first time I've done it all the way through. So we did like across America, because we've got offices in US, in San Francisco, in Australia, and here in London. And we did 100 games in 100 hours, which was ridiculous.
That's awesome.
And we did 24 of them in our UK office, just from Thursday till Friday. But the really silly thing was, because it was planned by my colleague Danny in the US, and that he very kindly scheduled our 24 hours to begin at 8 p.m. after a full working day.
Bad decision.
I was awake for like 38 hours, and
yikes,
it was awful. Well, it was great, but I was a mess. I had conversations when I got home with my housemates, which I don't remember. Because they asked me the next day, and it's like, do you remember? I was like, nope. But yeah, Extra Life is a great thing. We managed to raise, I think it was about just under $14,000 just from GameSpot, which is pretty cool. Giant Bomb were doing a similar thing, a bunch of people, and I see. Yeah. It's raised over $5 million already, $5 million.
It's so great.
Fantastic.
$5.1 million as of this morning. I want to give a shout out. There were, I think, two different groups that were calling themselves, or at least associating themselves as Team Kanata, or with Team Kanata. And I find that extremely, extremely exciting, extremely gratifying. It makes me very proud. And I'm so happy that those guys did that. And it's been a few years since I have done the 24-hour marathon, but I fully support the cause. Somebody sent a video this week via Twitter of our old 2009 when we did it. It just seems like a lifetime ago, but man, I just love, this is such a wonderful positive story of people doing something great for a really worthy cause. So something I wanted to highlight. I also wanted to highlight our talk back thread on the subreddit, which is going strong. I urge people to check that out. Subreddit is reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. And in this week's or last week's discussion thread, a couple of really interesting things. Jack Esquire recommended some really great board games on iPad, which I recommend people checking out. I support all of his recommendations. And there's some interesting discussion about graphics versus gameplay, comparing that to iPhones getting thinner versus having more battery life, which I thought was really interesting. So kudos to those guys for that stuff. And I really appreciate everybody contributing in the subreddit. Lots more stories here, but we have so much to talk about as far as gaming. I think we should get to the playlist right now. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Man, I have done more gaming in the last week than I have done in a while, probably since I got married. So I have a lot to talk about. But Cam, I want to hear, other than, well, I guess you can include your 24-hour sprint of gaming, your marathon, I should say. Marathon, not a sprint. But what else have you been into lately?
Well, sure. I can tell you the ones I remember playing, which weren't blocked out by the sleep deprivation. But other than the stream, I've been playing a lot of Metro, actually. So they released the, I forget the name they called it, but it was Metro Last Light and Metro 2043 bundled together in this PlayStation 4 unit. And it's really good. Like, I would challenge anyone who's not played Metro before, or even if you have played it on PC, to give it a try on the PS4, because I played Metro 2043 on PC before, but I'd never really had a PC good enough to make it run anything approaching smooth. So it was one of these, you know, you ever had that with a game when you want to keep playing because it's exciting, but you're just hampered by the fact that the frame rate's all over the shop and everything. But on the PS4, the way they've built it because they built it in the engine they used to make Last Light, it's just really great. And it's got this thing which I'm way too excited about, in the fact, finally a good use, guys, for the light on your PlayStation 4 controller. So when you are visible, it's bright and lit up. And when you're in the shadows, it goes dark, which I think might be the best use of a light I've ever seen. It was great. So
Didn't Thief do that too?
Oh, I think it did too. Yeah. I think it did too. Yeah. Have you guys played Metro at all?
Oh yeah.
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 You a fan?
I played the first one until it broke on my 360 back in the day. Yeah. Which was really, really sad. You know how you put the goggles on, and then if they, you know, if they're going bad, they'll shatter and then you can't see anything. There was a glitch that I was not able to take my goggles off. So I was like, I was probably 2/3 of the way through the game and that glitch happened. I talk about bad frame rate. It wasn't even bad frame rate. It was literally looking through a filter of terrible view. And I was like, I can't continue on this. And I read about that glitch and there was no way to recover your save game from
that.
Wasn't that
just ultra hard mode or something?
Yeah. Yes. I can play this game blindfolded. And then I played a fair amount of Last Light, but I didn't get into it as much as the first one. But both very, very cool games. The environment of those games I find fatiguing almost, because it's so depressing and so, you know, you're like, oh, should I use this bullet on the bad guy or should I spend it as money? You know, it's really tough decisions.
Yeah, it's what surprises me is how good it looks, which may seem like a dumb thing considering Metro is you know, harked as this one of a benchmarking franchise, almost like Crysis. But that, you know, Metro 2043 is quite old now. It's, I can't think of exactly how many years, but it's not a new game. But they've done a great job of making it one of the best looking games I've played in the PS4. So aside from that, though, I've started just at the beginning of Alien Isolation, kind of got stuck, also kind of too terrified to keep playing. I've been playing, like, finishing off Wolfenstein. I never quite finished that. I love that game, apart from the first couple of hours, which are really average at best. But I think that game is amazing overall. So you mentioned that earlier, Christian. You were playing that, right?
Yeah.
Cool. And what did you make?
do
you agree with me about the intro? Like, I felt like that first mission feels like it was something they didn't even create at the beginning. And they had, so the intro, if you haven't played it, basically just gives you a reason to be in, you know, the battlefield where you've got all these like Nazi war machines and everything. And you fly in on this plane with this Scottish guy who goes, you're Raji Gaji, which I quite enjoyed. But it seems like they've just tacked that on as a way to get you into the situation. And then once you're past that bit, the game opens up and is brilliant. But did you have that same impression?
Well, I mean, that, I think calling it a bit is understated. It's like an hour, right? I mean, it's a long pace. I almost feel like what that is doing is easing people into the world, because that part is very much corridor shooter, very comfortable. All the weapons are things that you know. And then after it opens up, it goes a little, not crazy town, but you know what I mean? There's stealth or whatever. And I'm wondering if, I think the only fault I have with it is that it's maybe 40 minutes too long, but I think it serves as an effective tutorial without it feeling like go run through this maze, you know, the way early like Call of Duty 4 and stuff like that did it. And I think it's cool from a storytelling perspective of setting tone and letting you see how bleak that war was without just hearing about it, because then you do hear about it, right? And why that your guy, you know, the you as the character are just a killing machine. And I think it helps set tone, but it did. I remember playing it thinking, I don't know how this game is so great. I heard so many great things about it, but this just feels very standard. I would have loved it to have been at least half the length. I mean, did it really bump you hard, or is it just kind of like unexpected?
It bumped me hard. Like it's the reason why I'm still finishing it now is because I put it down and didn't come back to it until a friend of mine was like, no, persevere through that first hour. It's terrible. But then it gets really, really good. Then it gets really good. And I was like, yeah, I don't believe you. This seems like your standard, you know, by the numbers, generico FPS. But no, he was absolutely right. The moral is listen to your friends.
But, I mean, you don't think that has paid off for you? Because I do. I think it was too long, but I feel like the game is better because of it. Like the cool stuff is cooler and the world makes more sense because I played through that slop, if that makes any sense.
I guess. Maybe the answer is it could have just been a bit shorter. But there's like a turret sequence at the beginning. And who wants a turret sequence, really? I mean, do you ever want a turret sequence? I know I don't. And I felt little bits like that. It felt like it'd been built by numbers, by someone who didn't really know what they're doing. And it's like, oh, we're in an airplane, so we better throw in a turret sequence here. And no, this thing's going to be on fire, and you better go down and twist that thing there. And I don't know, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And what worries me is that there'll be people who have played that beginning bit who are as fickle as I am and who will just put it down and won't have had that friend who told them, no, give that another go. Because it's a really great game and it's one of my favorites of this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. You and I need to be that friend then. I've been that friend on this podcast and you can scream.
I need to get some friends then.
Well.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. I think that game will be a great Black Friday pickup for people. You know, leading into the holiday season. I think that game, Titanfall, a few games that are really fun games that should have some steep discounts that hopefully will persuade people that haven't tried them yet to jump in.
Well, it seems like to me one of the themes of this episode has been about sort of the slow burn of the consoles and how PC games are really where it's at. That's certainly been my experience this year, this week especially. I've just was reminded how much I love gaming on my PC right now. I got Civ Beyond Earth, which I haven't played enough to really have a firm opinion on yet, but it certainly gave a great first impression. I can't even really talk about that. I'll talk about that in the coming weeks as I put more time into it. But I did play a lot of a game that is one of those games that feels like it was made just for me, just like Divinity. You know, I sung the praises of Divinity, which still is my game of the year right now, Divinity Original Sin. But this is we're in this wonderful time where game developers are able to put out games on PC that are updates of these classic kind of play styles that I loved as a kid. And you know, as much as I loved Ultima and those role-playing games, the very first game that I ever remember falling in love with, the first PC game I guess Pac-Man and those, I was in love with those games, but playing at home, being blown away by the possibilities of, it was a game called Bard's Tale by Brian Fargo. And it was a first-person party-based role-playing game. And I played the living heck out of that game. My buddy and I would come over, and when the healers would heal someone, we would go, the priest lay hands on him, and he is healed, which is what it would say in text. Anyway, there is this game called Legend of Grimrock 2 that I've been rocking all week, and I'm hooked. It's fantastic. I never played the first Legend of Grimrock. I don't know how I missed it. But this sequel, I downloaded it from Steam. It's only $25, I think. And it is not a game that everyone will love, but it is a game that I truly love. It is first person, but it is in that old grid-based style like Bard's Tale was, where it's kind of from this lineage of playing role-playing games using graph paper, you know, on the tabletop. So everything is a grid. So if you push forward, you move forward one grid and stop. And if you turn you know, if you turn right, you turn right 90 degrees and then move forward one grid, and everything is in this grid based. It's sort of archaic. It feels a little outdated, but it works really, really well. And the game is this wonderful mix of that Bard's Tale role-playing party-based system where you have to swipe at things in front of you, and if they're behind you, they attack the people in the back of your party, and if they're on the side of you, they attack the people on the side of your party. So you have this party of four people in a square, and you're just clicking on things, and they swipe at them, or you throw a rock, and the rock goes careening off in front of you, and it smacks whatever it lands on. So it's a mix between that and, you know, you're role playing up your guys and you're, you know, getting new skills and all that stuff. And another old game, Myst, which was a first person puzzle based game. And this game has a lot of that lineage as well. The story of the game is that you crash on this island and you have nothing. You wake up in a cage with nothing, and you pick up a branch, and that's what you have to fight the first few creatures with, is this branch, right? And you go from that to being uber powerful over the course of the game, but along the way you have to solve a lot of puzzles, and you're on this island, and there's sort of this malevolent presence that is leaving notes for you everywhere saying, can you solve my puzzles? Can you defeat my creatures? I bet you can't. And you don't really know what that's all about, and you have to sort of put things together, but it is very much old school lever puzzles and, you know, step on a switch puzzles and find a secret location puzzles. All these things are very old school, but man, the game comes together in such an elegant way. I think the graphics are really well done. I'm having such a blast feeling that progression of powering up from somebody that was using a branch to using wild magic, and it's got really fun systems. You can rest at any time and that'll heal you, but you always have to feed your people and they get hungry. And so you have to kill things to get food, you know, get meat from those things so that you can feed your people, which is usually a very tedious kind of thing. But in this game, it's a wonderful balancing mechanic of being able to heal at any time. But if you spend time healing, then you guys get hungrier. And so you'll have to use a resource of food. And so it forces you to fight more, to kill things, to get food. And it's just everything complements each other. And I'm having such a great time exploring this island and getting into the combat. I think most people will find really simplistic and kind of frustrating because you're just walking up to stuff and smacking it and running away. Go ahead.
I don't want to be dismissive, and I'm trying not to come across that way. But like, how much of this would you say for other people, this is a good game versus how much is it, this is a perfect game for you, and because of nostalgia, you know, makes it fill you with warm fuzzies?
It
sounds to me like it's old systems that games have improved upon.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a throwback, but it's done really, really well. I feel like I couldn't recommend it in the same way I recommend Divinity to people. But for people that have, I mean, I don't know. I would love for you to try this game and see what you think of it. It may not be something you would dig at all. It feels very old school. Even Divinity is old school, but doesn't feel old school. This feels old school, but just so well done. And I find myself thinking a lot, you know, like it asks me to think, it asks me to digest information in really interesting ways and think laterally and try certain things. And it's really mean in a way games aren't now. Like, you'll walk up to something really cool and you'll pick it up and it'll teleport you into a room with a bunch of enemies that will kill you. Like, it didn't give you any warning that would happen. That just happens, but you can save anywhere. So maybe hopefully you saved before that happened. You know, it's like,
it's
an
old
school game.
Cam, I saw you in the chat. I think you said that you loved Myst. I mean, to some extent, saving anywhere is great, but now I'm playing this game, taking one step forward and saving. Like, is this a game, Cam, that like strikes you as like, this is it? Or like, do you think you'd like Myst now? Or did you like Myst because it was so pretty and we were all four? Or eight or ten, whatever.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's because it was pretty and I was rubbish at Myst. I think I maybe solved one Myst puzzle ever, and that was probably the help of my dad. But it was definitely the kind of pretty angle. Like, I think I would enjoy it now though, because I like puzzle games and I'm better than I was when I was four. I'm still not very good. But I'd probably get two puzzles done. This I'm just actually checking while you were talking, Jeff. I was obviously listening, but also looking at the trailer on Steam, and it looks like what I'm interested is I'd be interested to give this game to people who have just played Skyrim and to see if they would think they would find this constricting, or if they would get like, because I think I would get a lot out of this.
It's a kind of an unfair, that's a little unfair comparison. I mean, that's like saying, you know, I'll give you a cheeseburger and compare it to, you know, this gourmet meal.
Well, not so much as a comparison. What I mean is, like, it'd be interesting to see what the Skyrim generation would make of it. I'm not trying to say you should be comparing the two. I'm just interested to see how people like that would get on with it. Because I think I would get on with this quite well, because there's a lot for me in this type of turn-based, kind of grid-based fantasy world game thing. But it'd be
fun to give it turn-based. It is very much real time, which is think one of the ways the combat feels a little clunky is because the monsters are smacking you. There's this frog thing that'll like stick its tongue out and steal one of your weapons away. And all you're doing is clicking in these little boxes in the bottom right-hand part of the screen, which shows what your hands are holding, and you can put whatever you want in your hands. If you put a rock in your hands and you click it, it throws a rock. If you put a sword in your hand, it swings a sword. If you put a wand in your hand, it opens the spell book, which then asks you to create certain patterns out of these runes to cast spells. So you're doing this all in real time, and it's kind of manic and crazy, and you're in this little portion of the window at the bottom right trying to do things fast and deal with things and open your inventory to take a potion or whatever. And meanwhile, these creatures are either surrounding you and preventing you from moving, or they are running away, or you're trying to maintain this dance of moving into a square so that they can't hit you, and then moving back into the square that's in front of them so you can smack them. So it's all real time and kind of clunky, but it's weird how much I love it. It's like clunky and strange, but I love it.
Can you do dumb stuff like put cheese in your hand and throw that? I mean, is it in that kind of same open way, which here are the controls, do whatever the hell you want to try and kill these bad guys. Like, okay.
Very much so.
It sounds like fun.
It's really great.
And I want to say, I love the fact that this game exists. I love where we are, where gaming is today, where games can come out like this and, you know, be out and maybe not be on people's radar. And then you can discover them because you're not worried about, you know, shelf space per se, and your local mom and pop store doesn't carry it, or GameStop doesn't carry it, because why would they ever carry this game? Like, I love that this game exists, and I love that you're having fun with it. But at the same time, I do, this whole time, I feel like you're sitting here, and I love that you're so excited. This is Jeff Cannata that everybody loves, right? But I feel like you're sitting here with the thickest pair of rose-colored glasses on.
The first thing I said when I started talking about this was, this game isn't for everybody.
I know. No, that's what I'm saying. But
I put 15 hours into it already, and I'm just scratching the surface. I love it.
So now I know why I got a text on Friday, like an hour before the game, saying you weren't going to come over.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. Somebody in the chat is asking me to restate the name. It's called Legend of Grimrock 2, and it's on Steam, and it's under $25. If I can get some other people to give it a shot, I think mission accomplished, because I think it's fantastic. I really, really do. And it's super moddable, and you can like build your own levels and stuff. But the levels in the game are interesting, and the puzzles are clever. Very old school puzzles, and there's lots of them. There's going to be parts of the game where you're just stuck, and you know, I haven't resorted to looking online for anything yet. I'm just kind of letting the game be the way it's supposed to be, you know, which is like, okay, well, I got to figure out how to move on from this. It's great. Christian, I have another game I want to talk about, but Christian, tell me what is on your playlist.
Well, just quickly then, I've been playing it for a while and always forget to mention it. I often sing the praises of Zen Studios Pinball or Pinball Arcade, whatever it's called on your system of choice. The South Park tables, man, they do really great work with licensed tables. The Walking Dead table, I think I mentioned. That could be a great, if you want a little Halloween time fun for a low price of entry. It's a really well done table, and the South Park tables are a joy to play. I think that as a hardcore South Park fan, you'll get more out of them. But even if you haven't watched since season 5, you'll have fun. And if you can only get one or only want to play one, I would recommend the Butters table, because Butters, I love him so much, and I think it's a very fun, whimsical table. So pick those up. I love those. I have them on every device. I have some form of Zen Pinball on my phone, iPad, Vita, 3DS, Xbox, and PS4. I think they're just such great pop-in and plays. And I think people would be very happy with those. That's all.
That's it? Okay.
I mean, I'm playing other stuff, but it's old stuff. It's more, I still love Destiny. I'm still playing Smash 3DS. I've played in the same room with people. And I'm just as bad in the same room with people as I am online. So that's good to know. But those are still great. I'm still having lots of fun with them. But nothing new. Sunset Overdrive will be next week.
Yes, I think we'll be talking about that a lot next week. I'm not playing anything else new as well, though Civ Beyond Earth. But I've gotten back into a game, and I you guys buckle in, because I'm about to pour Kool-Aid all over this bee. You know, everybody knows that I'm a Blizzard fanboy. We get that, right? I talked about Heroes of the Storm. In fact, a lot of people responded after last week when I asked, you know, do you guys want to hear me talk about Heroes of the Storm more? A lot of people said yes, so I'll be doing that at a later date in more detail. But I finally got back into Diablo 3. And I've talked a lot about Diablo 3 in the past in various ways. I haven't really played a ton of it since the big patch. I played a little of it, but my gaming group, the guys that kind of jump from MMO to MMO, we all kind of decided to go back to Diablo 3. And holy crap, I'm back hooked on this game. And I might be a little late to the party on this, but if anybody hasn't tried it post-patch, it's a completely different game. And it is glorious. This is the Diablo we all wanted. They, at Blizzard, I give them such kudos for understanding what makes Diablo special and really reinforcing it. Cam, have you played any of Diablo since the patch?
I started playing it before the patch on PC, and then I started playing again recently on PS4. So I'm guessing that is the post-patch version, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't played enough to really see any big differences. Like, I've only played a couple of hours. So on you go.
The magic really is in the end game, and this is after you hit level 70. What they have fixed, what they have changed, is really re-emphasizing loot again. Now, Diablo is a loot game. We know that. It's all about loot, and it lost its way a little bit. I mean, I put 100 hours into Diablo 3 before, you know, back in the auction days. So I loved it even then. But, you know, credit to Garnet back in the day and others who decried the auction house and decried some of the systems that they had built into the game that really broke what makes the loot special. And they have completely fixed it. And it isn't just about taking out the auction house. First of all, before I even get to that, though, adventure mode, the rift systems, all the stuff you do at the end game in Diablo 3 is ridiculously fun. Ridiculously fun. And it changes things up. Previously, when you got to the end of Diablo 3, you just kept starting over at the beginning on a higher difficulty and kept playing through the game. And okay, well, how far into the chapters, into the acts of Diablo can we get on a higher and higher difficulty level? Now, in adventure mode, you're dropped into different acts with different enemies in different places. There's a bounty system where you're asked to go into certain areas and kill a certain thing or do a certain thing. And it's always different. It's always changing. And because the levels are procedurally generated, that's always different. So what you're actually doing is really fun. The rifts that you go into, which are these sort of press your luck situations, the greater rifts where you get to the end, you're not getting any loot throughout the entire progression. You get to the end and then you fight a boss and you kill that boss and then you can eat and he drops loot. But then you can either upgrade your key to try a harder rift or upgrade a gem in the game. And those gems are very, very powerful. So you can keep trying to upgrade your key and keep trying to press your luck and see how much higher difficulty you can get in these rifts. So anyway, all that stuff is really fun. But what the brilliant thing that they did with the loot is that instead of it being a sword that is +6 to something instead of +5 or whatever, it's not just a stat upgrade. There are still stats, but when Diablo 3 launched, the better stuff just did the stuff they did better. You know, it was this one does more damage than the one before it and therefore is better. Or this one protects me better than the one before it, so I should wear that. What they do now is something that board game designers have known for a long time, that is really, really fun. the stats on the weapons, the stats on the armor, the special legendary items and the big set bonus pieces break the rules of the game. So they have just thrown out the idea of balancing whatsoever. There's kudos to them for knowing, hey, we shouldn't make a versus mode. We shouldn't make a multiplayer deathmatch mode, which they originally said they were going to. No, no, no. What we should do is make you feel like the biggest badass in the universe. And when you get something awesome, when something awesome drops, likely it will let you break the rules of our game. So, for example, I have a set bonus of items that let me take a skill in the game that usually expires after a certain time, and it doesn't expire. It doesn't expire. Or there are runes for certain skills that give them awesome bonuses, right? And you have to select one of five runes to put on your skill, and you know, figuring out what that is a big part of the game. Well, there's a set bonus that lets you go, all the runes are applicable. You can use all the runes at once. So basically, you're getting to break the rules. You're getting to be super powerful. And it's making, when you get one of these new items, it gives you a different play style. And the genius part of Diablo 3, even at launch, was that instead of what had been traditionally the case, where you have your build and you put your points into certain trees and that's what you're stuck with. And if you want to change it, you either pay to respec or you build a new character. Well, in Diablo 3, even from launch, it was this wonderfully variable system where you could switch out your skills at any time, and there was lots of different equally viable builds for characters. And now the items themselves suggest builds for you. The items themselves give you really cool incentives to try a certain skill set, to try a certain build out with your character. And they make getting new items transfer into playing the game in a different way, in a more powerful way, in a more fun way. The game is completely a new experience, and I highly recommend, if anybody stopped playing Diablo 3 and hasn't played since the patch, I am drinking the Kool-Aid back into this game in a huge way.
I think to some extent, Jeff, what you've answered is your own question as to whether or not side modes in games make sense. Because essentially, the way you're playing Diablo 3 is a side mode. It's not the main game. It's not how the game was quote-unquote designed, but it's these cool features that they've put into it that gives the game replayability and fun new twists on something that you used to think was familiar. And I think for a lot of people, that's what modes in Fighters do, the modes in Smash do, where it's like you have this universe that you know and how it works and how the controls work and what you're supposed to do, and we're turning some of those things on their head. And what this patch has done for you is it's brought new life into a game that you had spent 100 hours in, where you say it's a whole new game. It's not. I mean, you're still clicking on stuff. You know what I mean? You're still right clicking. I guess you're left-handed, so you're still left clicking on everything as fast as you can and tapping on the keyboard from time to time to change your, or, you know, to use a super or special or whatever, use a rune, whatever you want to do, right? It's the same game, but to you, for you, it's tweaked that established formula enough, and, you know, in your announcer voice, we flip the rules on their head. And to you, that's been enough to make you sink hours and hours back into this game. And I think that's what those types of modes and other games do. Like, I don't know if Cam, if you have a game that's like, you know, put it in my veins, that's like your IV, keeps you alive. But I feel like, Jeff, for you, these type of games are often that. And once you get to New Game Plus mode, you love new twists on an old favorite.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, no, sorry. I was going to say, The game that lives in my veins and has become part of me is would be Skyrim, for sure. I mean, and that's what I love. Okay, Skyrim didn't get like this kind of an official update. I mean, it had texture things and there was DLC and all that stuff. But that's where the modern community stepped in for Skyrim, and I think that is an alternative approach. But it sounds cool that they've actually opened this up, like, you know, kind of giving you the cheat book, as what it seems, as part of the game. But what I was thinking while you were talking, Jeff, was, does this not just completely mess with the balance of you versus the enemies, or does that not matter?
Well, yeah, it does. And that's what's so great about it, is that there is this infinitely scalable top end. So you're constantly pushing up against the limits of how long you can survive and how much damage you can do. But there is no top end to that. There's a Paragon leveling system that does not stop. You just keep going and going and going. And the enemies, as I said, in that push your luck scenario, just get more and more difficult the higher up you go. And you're constantly, yes, you become uber powerful and you break the rules of the game, but you're not ever out-leveling the bad guys, because there's always another difficulty level to try to tackle. There's always a plus one to your greater rift key. So, and because you're not playing against other players, you're playing with other players, being more powerful is always better. And it always feels awesome to find some new thing that let you do something that you previously couldn't. It's great. It's funny. Space Bob made a point in the chat. He said there's an argument to be made that that campaign mode is the side mode and that this is the real game. And I think that's kind of true. Just getting through the campaign is like step one to start enjoying what is really the exciting part now, which is this reinvention. I just am so impressed that they could look at this game with fresh enough eyes to recognize what was wrong with it and recognize how to fix it. I mean, there really wasn't much wrong with it. It was a fantastic game that I poured 100 hours into. But they understood that at the end game, they really had the clarity to see what is special about these type of games, what you want out of them, and how to make them fun. And they just... And this is a game that you don't pay a subscription fee for. There really wasn't much incentive. I mean, yes, they're probably going to announce a new expansion at BlizzCon. So there is, you know, more product to sell. But this is a huge update that changed a game that they're probably not going to sell too many more copies of. You know, it's very impressive. And this is a company that, you know, I sing the praises of a lot. But there are very few companies like that.
Did you write your own wedding vows and end them where you were like, I promise to love you and Blizzard, and cherish you and Blizzard. For as long as we both shall live, Blizzard, I will continue to live in love in the afterlife.
I just look at, I mean, there's people feel this way about Call of Duty. You know, there's people who spend, you know, lifetimes in the end game of Call of Duty. There's people feel this way about, what's the other, Counter-Strike. You know, there's people that feel this way.
Team Fortress
Cam,
2.
Team yeah. Fortress 2. Cam, you feel this way about Skyrim. And in fact, I would love for you to talk a little bit about some mods, like this many years later, you're still doing a show about mods, right? What are the greatest Skyrim mods right now that sort of revitalize that game?
Oh, it's insane. The way this game continues to be a viable option for your use of your time is crazy. And the way it's all supported, like Bethesda do nothing anymore. Like they've put Skyrim aside, and that's fine. And they are doing other things, hopefully Fallout 4 or something. But it's I've never seen a game where the community is quite so continued to keep this game afloat. And so I do a weekly show where we showcase 5 mods for Skyrim, which is ingeniously called Top 5 Skyrim Mods of the Week. Yeah, we're very inventive over at GameSpot. But it's like, for example, last week or a few weeks ago, we had this new mod which enabled you to clean up the corpses that you find around Skyrim. Now, this may seem like a weird thing, but if you play a lot of Skyrim, you'll know you come back to Riverwood, we haven't been for a while, and it's filled with corpses of cultists or whatever, and you think, oh man, these don't go anywhere. But actually, now there's a mod, and you can bury them, you can kind of put them on a funeral pyre, you can do all these crazy things, and so it's like these kind of mad out there mods like that. But then there's just some of the best ones, I think, are some of the, obviously the EMBs that have been, so these are like lighting mods that you can add to Skyrim, they've made the biggest difference. The texture packs and the lighting mods really make Skyrim look like a new game. I mean, we were playing it on our extra live stream the other day, our heavily modded version that we use in the show, and people in the chat were like, what game is this? And like, this is Skyrim, man. This is what it looks like on PC now if you choose the right mods and have a decent rig. It's mad to see, and I would love to see more games or more developers kind of go the Bethesda route. I love how when they release a game like this, they're like, hey guys, here's the keys to the kingdom, you go and make whatever the hell you want for this game. It can be crazy. It can be copyright infringing, as it usually is, and sometimes they get taken down. But this, like, you can get mods. You can play Sonic the Hedgehog and stuff in Skyrim, which is just crazy.
You've not
seen your childhood destroyed until you've accidentally decapitated Donatello, as we did in the video one time. I mean, that is just horrific.
Well, I think this is exactly what I was kind of talking about with regards to the Assassin's Creed worlds. You know, like, when you create a world as interesting and detailed as the Skyrim world that people just want to live in, we see this with GTA on PC as well. These worlds that are expansive and varied and allow for sort of residence inside them, and then if they give you the tools to mod them, people will invest that kind of time and invest in the world that you created. And I wish we could do that with those wonderful Assassin's Creed worlds.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. And in fact, the thing is, there's even new worlds. Like, some of the biggest mods that have got the most press is this one called Falskar, which made like news headlines, I think it was last year, because this guy single-handedly created this mod, Falskar, which was this whole new area of Skyrim. And then he actually got picked up by Bungie, I think, if I remember correctly. I don't know, my memory's not very good. But some big publisher then kind of brought him on board. Sorry, big developer. So yeah, it's not just reinventing these and finding new ways to play in these old kind of worlds the developers create. It's even giving you keys to make new stuff. I mean, I love it. I could talk about modding Skyrim all day, but probably not the best.
I think it's cool.
But still the best mod of anything, though, is the Exploding Chickens mod. If you have one mod, it should be that makes all chickens explode.
So I think I might have $1 million idea. So it's a game that lets you build your own world, and then your friends can come into it and build also.
Can I craft stuff in it?
Yeah, like, and there's an adventure mode out of it, and it's just, anyway, I think it could be, forget million, I think this thing could be sold to, I don't know, maybe Sony or someone down the line for billions.
How do you feel about wearing a selection of hats?
I'm on board.
Okay. But wait, I don't want to spend a lot of money on graphics on this game.
Oh, no, that's the beauty of it. It can run on almost any machine or even your iOS device. I mean, I think when people see this, their reaction would be, dang. No, it's stronger than that. Like, mojang, something along those lines.
Oh, my God. I'm shutting this down. You just stepped over the line, Spicer. That was a stretch of...
We had a real thing going there.
I cannot allow that. I cannot allow that. Even me. Mr. Dad joke. I cannot allow that. All right, we're running out of time, guys, but we do have a little bit of tabletop time left. Right now. Cam, I know you're not a huge board gamer. We're not going to spend a ton of time on the tabletop this week, but I do have a big tabletop guest coming in next week who is going to tell us all about Essen, and so it'll be a big tabletop episode next week. So tabletop fans, tune in then. But I did want to comment on this subreddit thread in our subreddit from Capped Box, who pointed to friend of our show and prominent video game reviewer Tom Vassell. He was on episode, I don't remember, he came on our show a while back, but really cool guy, probably the one human on the face of this planet that plays the most board games. He does hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of reviews every year. He does a show called The Dice Tower and a whole Dice Tower network of board gaming shows that I recommend. Every year he does his top 100 games of all time. Tom Vassell's top 100 games of all time. He just finished the list. He did the top 10, and in the subreddit, they wanted some comment on his top 10. Now, obviously, this is one man's opinion. They do a lot of top 100 lists on their site, so there's a lot of different people you can talk about. And the one thing you have to know about Tom is that he's kind of he's very into certain themes. You know, he likes the Dungeons and Dragons type dungeons themes, so you see a lot of that on his list. But I thought it'd be fun to run this down and talk a little bit about it, because he's such a prominent guy in that field. His number 10 game is Marvel Legendary, which is a deck-building Marvel game that I like quite a bit as well. People would dig it. Number 9 is Marvel Dice Masters, which is a game I've talked about a lot on this show. Really awesome game, which is, just came out this last year. Number 8 is Lahav, which is another game I've talked about a lot that is probably... I've never done a, top 10 all-time whatever, but it might be my favorite game. It's hard to pick against Lahav. It's a fantastic game. The same designer appears next on his list with a game called Caverna. It's another game by Uwe Rosenberg, a game I talked about this year as well. It's kind of an update to Agricola, but it's all about being a cave farmer and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Worker placement game that is very expensive, but incredible, incredible game. The next game on his list is Duel of Ages 2, which I've never played, so I can't comment on that, but I hear good things. And then Summoner Wars, which is a game I recommend all the time. Two-player game. It was like... There's an iOS game that came out a few years ago that we talked about a lot on We Can Confirm that was like this game. I can't remember the name of it. It's basically kind of a combination between chess and Dungeons & Dragons. You're moving guys on a board and trying to capture their spawn point. Really cool. And then Mage Wars, which is another sort of... tabletop fighting people with using your deck of spells that you compose before the game, which is really cool. Descent 2 is his number 3 game, which is a dungeon crawling game that sort of lets you play Dungeons and Dragons without having to have a dungeon master. Really long experience, but very cool. Number 2 is Heroescape. It's a game that's not available anymore. But the big news this week was the game that I talked about before Essen, which we had just heard whispers of, which is Magic the Gathering, the board game. Evidently, Magic the Gathering, the board game, is kind of a new version of Heroescape. So you're going to have terrain tiles. You're going to be able to put those on a board, move your guys around, your planeswalkers around, and have them battle. It's got a lot of people very excited who loved Heroescape when they were kids. This is a game that's been around for 30 years or so. And another older game is his number 1 game. It's no surprise if you know Tom. It's called Cosmic Encounter, which is not a game I'd put in my number 1 slot, but it's a game he certainly loves. He's famous for loving it. It's a 40-year-old game that is all about ruling the galaxy, negotiating with other players, having special alien powers and using them. So I thought that would be a kind of a fun rundown. At some point, maybe I'll do my top 10 board games and share them with the listeners. So that's going to do it for tabletop time. But again, next week we'll have a lot of that, the hands-on Essen commentary, because I got somebody coming on who was there, which is really exciting. And of course, we'll be talking about Sunset Overdrive next week, so don't miss that episode. That's going to do it for this week. We have a parting gift coming up, but before that, Cam, tell everybody...
Yeah.
Where they can see your stuff.
Cool, yeah. Oh, just a point on the board game thing. Before the show, I was trying to remember the name of that game that I'd played that was with aliens and encountering things and a cosmic... Yeah, it was Cosmic Encounter.
Oh,
that's
really?
That's the game I played.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That's the one.
Okay.
So you said it, I Googled it. It's like, that's the one. And that game is awesome.
It is awesome,
I played that
yeah.
at Christmas, and it's great.
That's
but
great.
But yeah, so I have played a legit, popular board game, so I'm not completely clueless. I'm only mostly clueless about this. If you can find my stuff at gamespot.com. We've got a Skyrim mods show if you like Skyrim, or if you like science and games, and because those two things fit together really well, I think, then you should check out my show Reality Check. In fact, there's a ton of really great blogs and stuff out there about science and games. I don't know if you guys ever checked out, there's a great website called The Psychology of Video Games from a chap called Jamie Madigan.
Yes.
If you're in, that's really worth checking out if you're into the psychology of video games, funnily enough. So hit me up on Twitter. I'm at @CamFrazRob. Send me messages, abuse, whatever. It'd be great to hear from you.
Cool.
Christian. Mainly messages.
Christian, what are you up to this week, man?
You can find me online at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R, is where I'm mostly at on Twitter. Jess Lane, my co-host for Extra Credit in Los Angeles, is back in town after doing some pilot presentation stuff in New York. It's Wednesdays at 10 p.m. at the Clubhouse here in Los Angeles. It's free. It's fun. I'm trying to think of other bigger things coming up where I might be out of town and somewhere near you people. I'm in San Diego The 22nd and 23rd. I think that's that weekend at Legend Comedy Club. And then I guess the big thing I'll keep touting, December 2nd at Lestat's in San Diego, I will be recording my first album. It'll be a free show. Jeremiah Watkins will be featuring that. And if not, people can check out the album when it comes out early 2015 is what it's
very cool. I am doing the Slash Filmcast. We've got big reviews coming very soon of some very big movies. We're moving into the your Interstellars, your John Wicks coming up, your Birdmans, all that stuff. You should check that out over at slashfilm.com. Also, check out We Have Concerns. That's at wehaveconcerns.com, the show I do with Anthony Carboni, all about ridiculous science and psychology things that we poke fun at and try to understand. People are really digging it. I hope you give it a shot. wehaveconcerns.com. All right, before we go, we're going to give the people something else to check out. Might not be a video game. It's our parting gift. And Cam, I'm curious what you've got to recommend to the folks.
To recommend? Well, if you the final game we played on our live stream the other day was Dive Kick. And if you've never given Dive Kick a go, play Dive Kick because that game is so much fun. That's my recommendation.
Dive Kick. Very cool. Christian, you got a recommendation?
Yeah, you guys, I guess you can hear more about it on the upcoming Slash Filmcast, but if it is out in your city, I'm not sure of the wide release that it may or may not be getting. My personal one-man review, go see Birdman. Oh, it's so great. Michael Keaton leading, a great cast, all around. What a fun movie. I don't want to get too much about it, but it's, you know, Michael Keaton's character played an iconic superhero in a movie, and his career kind of never reached the same heights after that, and now he's an older gentleman trying to reclaim his life to some extent. It's really, really worth watching, in my opinion. Go see Birdman.
Awesome. And mine, I did a music recommendation last week, but I got another one for you. My favorite artist in the world, Prince, came out with a new album recently called Artificial Age. And man, it's awesome. It's awesome. If you ever dug Prince, if you ever wanted to dance, put on the first track of Artificial Age. I dare you not to move your feet. But it's a fantastic album top to bottom. He is still rad. He's not just rad in the 80s. He's still rad and still putting out exceptional music. Artificial Age. Check it out.
Can I be real cheeky? Because I didn't mean to do. I didn't realize it could be non-game things. So if it's a music one,
please.
There's a great band who I'm not sure if they've broken the US yet, but they're huge over here in the UK. I'm actually going to go and see them on Thursday night. A band called Churches, except the U is a V, so it's Chiverches. Okay. They're from Glasgow. They are fantastic. They're like pop, electro, bit of rock. I don't know. It's amazing. You should go and check them out. So that's Churches, except instead of a U, it's a V. I'll put it in the chat. That's probably another easy way of doing that. So Chiverches.
I will be checking them out, man. That sounds awesome. I love getting the, like, you heard it here first. It only hasn't broken in the U.S. yet. It's only overseas. I love that stuff. That's awesome. Very, very cool. Chiverches. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks so much to you, Cam, for being here. I really appreciate it. Yeah, this is really cool. I'll have to have you back again. To Christian. Thanks to everybody hanging out in the chat and all of you listening. Thanks to Zach Holder for producing the show. I don't thank him enough, man. He does incredible work, and we really appreciate it. But thanks to everybody who's listening, and we'll be back next week, 11 a.m. Pacific time. We'll be live at 5by5.tv/live or wherever you happen to listen. But until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.